Well, hello there, and welcome to the AFA Podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com. This is episode 78, and I am Chris, and I am joined this week just by one of my colleagues, and it's Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
How are you doing? It's been a little while since you've been on the show.
It's been a little while, yeah. I took a couple weeks off, had some holiday time, but nice. Yeah, I'm back. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, so this week we're just going to do a bit of a general catch-up show, talking about some news that's been happening since last time we recorded, and also a couple of things that we've watched, although it'll be that I've watched, because Dan hasn't really watched anything. But still, we will be talking a bit about the Red Turtle later, because it finally came out in the UK, and we've both seen it, so we could talk about it a little bit, but we're not going to give away any spoilers or anything, because we are going to have a more detailed discussion on that film at some point in the near future, so watch this space. If this is your first episode, you can find our previous episodes on animationforadults.com, on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, and on podcast.com, and let's get going. So we're going to start off with some sad news this week, and that is the fact that Peter Salas, who's best known as the voice of Wallace in Wallace and Gromit, passed away this week. 96 he was. So good innings, as they say. But
I'm inclined, as sad as it is, like to react that way. I mean, that's a pretty. Yeah, like I said, a pretty good innings, but even so, it's kind of it's sad, because the character that you said he's best known for mm-hmm. playing, doing the voice of, is a pretty iconic one as they go, and was certainly I'm sure in everyone else's, but also in my like formative years, like a really mm-hmm. Present voice that was just in my head all the time and around the house, and you know, because Wallace and Gromit was always on, so it's sad news.
As I believe I've mentioned on the show before, most of my school years, the day began with my Wallace and Gromit speaking alarm clock.
Morning, Gromit.
With Wallace saying, "Morning, Gromit, time for walkies." So, yeah, very, very present in my life.
Wow.
for many years, that voice.
Wow, that's quite present.
Yeah. Yeah, he was legendary. And that the performance was a big part of what you associate with the character. Especially, you know, he's basically the only voice, because Gromit is mute, so it became even more important, because he's sort of voicing, you know, he's got to represent both characters in a way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And particularly in the case of something like A Grand Day Out, he pretty much carries the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he will be missed, and but we've got lots of brilliant Wallace and Gromit episodes and the film to look back on. So I don't know if there was going to be any more Wallace and Gromit anyway. And
I do happen to know that they experimented a couple of times with another actor doing Wallace's voice, I think, for a couple of ads or something like that.
I know they did a game. There was a game as well, a few years ago. Someone did an impersonation of it, and I think they did quite a good one. But and yeah, I think like for adverts and things, they've had impersonators. But I don't know. It would be quite different if it was an actual short or even another film. So
yeah, it would.
So whether Nick Park would want to do that, I don't know. Oof, he thinks that time
has... Not really the time to be having the conversation, is it? Unfortunately.
No, it's not. But I've just, yeah.
I'm not having a go. I'm just saying it's...
No.
I think that will become clear in time.
Yes. And also, he's not the only famous voice to pass away recently, because just yesterday as we record this, we found out that Adam West, the original Batman, Biff Pow style, 60s, campy, brilliant Batman, is no longer with us, which is very sad. Obviously better known not as an animation voice actor, but has also done a lot of animation voice acting.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good at it.
Because he's got a fantastic voice, so...
Yeah.
Which helps, yeah. He was in Family Guy a lot as the mayor, and he was very good, whatever you think of that show.
Yeah, so he's just one of those, like, massive... You know, it just sounds like a cliche, but he's like a real, like, larger-than-life sort of personality. You know, like a huge star. Yeah, that's sad as well.
And also, recently, they did the Return of the Caped Crusaders, I think it was called. The DC straight-to-disc animated movie in the style of the old 60s cartoons, a 60s show, and it featured Adam West and Burt Ward doing the voices. So,
oh really? I didn't know that. Oh yeah, that was based on the Batman 66 comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came out like late last year, I think.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but I saw the trailer and it was fun. So, yep, he'll be missed as well. So long, chum. As he would say. You see, that was my little... Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't actually know that was something he said. The original Batman series just sort of existed in this, like, place in the house growing up that it was kind of always... I just remember it being always on almost every evening.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, loving the theme song, but it living in that weird space where it's like, you know, you I'm so young, I remember that it was on, but I don't really remember the ins and outs of everything. I do remember, though, the moment I think which stuck in my head the most was him fighting the shark. A friend had it on video and I couldn't believe what I was watching. Really?
Holy bat repellent. I mean, holy shark repellent, even. Yeah. It was quite something. Yeah, because it was... Obviously, it was a 60s thing, but it was definitely, like, on, I think, like, children's TV in the UK, like, throughout the 90s. So, I remember having seen it as a sort of Saturday morning thing.
Right, yeah.
So that's how I got to see it. Sad news. So I think, yeah, that's enough sad news. We should move on to some happier news. Well, the next story is that some trailers came out this week, and the highest profile of those would be definitely the latest trailer for Pixar's Coco, which is coming out in Thanksgiving, for Thanksgiving in the US, and I think early December in the UK. This is the new film from Lee Unkrich, which is that how you say it? I think so.
Unkrich? I thought it was Unkrich.
Unkrich. That was close. And it is based on the Mexican holiday of Dia de Muertos, or Day of the Dead, which I probably completely mispronounced that, Mexican holiday of Day of the Dead. I'm not going to try and say it the other way.
Dia anymore. De los Muertos, is it?
That sounds
De
good.
Los Muertos?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing, Day of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen this trailer? Yes?
I have seen this trailer.
Yes.
It's, I don't know. It feels like the sort of thing which would play in a cinema, like kind of just announcing that the film exists.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are a few shots. Like half the trailer, I think, is the same as previous trailers. So it's not like a bunch of new footage with an entirely different approach to selling the movie, like trailers sometimes do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't really know. It looks like, it looks good. It looks interesting, but I'm having a similar reaction to it as I kind of did Inside Out, where it's like, okay, this doesn't look like immediately the most interesting visual representation of what it's describing, but I think more and more with Pixar, I'm actually not as enthralled with the world that's created, more with just how they tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of it looks probably. I really don't want to like talk smack about it, but it looks slightly less imaginative than I probably expected. It looks like a slightly straighter laced kind of fantasy. I don't know. It's hard to explain. That's kind of my reaction to it. But also, part of that reaction is similar to my one reaction for Inside Out trailers, which was, okay, I'm not blown away by the look of this, but it looks like it knows what it's doing, so I just want to watch the movie.
Mm-hmm. And it's Pixar, so you're going to watch it anyway, so...
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was pretty. I liked it.
mm-hmm.
And obviously, every time this film gets mentioned, someone says, Book of Life ripoff. And, That's been talked to death, and no pun intended. And the director of that film has given his full blessing to this, so it's, you know, this is a different film. Whether there are similarities or not, who knows? There are thematic similarities, and I think we said before, like, it's like there being two films set at Christmas. There's going to be snow and reindeer and stuff if you have two films set at Christmas.
Yeah.
So there are going to be similarities, but I think this film should be taken on its own terms. Having said that, I actually felt the more influence that vibe I got from it than Book of Life is it made me think of Spirited Away.
Yeah, again, like there was a shot halfway through the trailer where there's a big wide shot of like the city, and then it pans up and it's just passing a bridge, and it's almost identical to a similar shot in the bathhouse in Spirited Away when you have the monsters passing on the bridge.
And it looks like there's going to be like a train station on the afterlife, and that's sort of a Spirited Away type sort of idea.
Kind of, but then again, I think we've mentioned this before, but you know, you don't watch Spirited Away and then start saying, "Oh, this is an awful lot like Alice in Wonderland," because it's you know, Coraline exists and Pan's Labyrinth does, and you know, you just have to say, "Okay, is this type of story?"
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's a Spirited Away ripoff or anything. I'm just saying,
no, of course,
it put it in my mind, and I thought, oh, maybe this is, you know, in a way, going to be like there, Spirited Away, just not necessarily in a direct way, just in a sort of being in the same sort of ballpark, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some other trailers as well, including some, well, they were clips, really, from the new DuckTales. Did you watch any of those?
I did.
It looks great. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah, it looks like different to the, obviously to the first DuckTales mm-hmm. show they made. I really like the backgrounds. I really like the design. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's kind of in a similar format to Gravity Falls.
There's a lot of crossover of stuff, I believe.
There's a lot of stuff crossover, but also like the tone
mm-hmm.
is quite like there's one where Scrooge and one of the Huey, Dewey, or Louie is messing around with the clock, and it's like a time traveling clock or something, and he keeps getting like zapped through time, and
yes.
the way he like reacts at the end, the line comes, and it very much sounds like a Grunkle Stan line or something. Mm-hmm. It's quite So I mean, that's not a bad thing. It's just an observation, really, that it probably is, and I'm sure Disney are kind of aware that it's kind of filling that gap in the, you know, mm-hmm. that's left by Gravity Falls. So yeah, it looks interesting. It looks good.
And this is the first time I've heard, I think, actually, Dave Tennant doing Scrooge McDuck, and I'm glad that he's not just doing an impression of Alan Young. He's actually just doing his own take on it, and it's just, yep. You know, he's Scottish, so there you go. He doesn't sound like the same, just the exact same, which is, I think, you know, some people go, oh, I don't know, it doesn't sound like Scrooge McDuck, but, you know, it's a new Scrooge McDuck, so.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what, actually, also, I'm slightly thankful that the three twins are doing the sort of Donald Duck.
Yeah, the squeaky quack. Voice.
Because
yeah.
I've got to admit, as a kid, I actually found that quite hard to understand a lot of the time in DuckTales. I had to, I had to pay really close attention to that. So I'm okay with that controversial decision.
Yeah, well, you're not going to cast like Danny Pudi and is it Bobby Moynihan? Not that I knew who that was before they did that trailer.
he's Forval in anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only thing I'd seen. He was Saturday Night Live, apparently.
Yeah. But. Yes. Yeah. He's one of those like strange things where like you hear he's a massive star and it's like, oh, I haven't seen him on TV. It's funny because he's on this one show that doesn't air in the UK.
Yeah, we don't have Saturday Night Live, so we don't know.
Chris, you know? Chris,
yeah.
We're not missing out.
No, I know. I've seen the odd episode and I'm like, this is the funniest show in the world, apparently. Really?
Yeah. I know.
Especially when there are so many such funny people who come from it, and that's what's really mystifying.
I think it's more that like it's maybe pound for pound the funniest show, but like its poundage is it airs like 4 hours a week, so
yeah.
So they're allowed a bigger hit to miss ratio. Maybe I don't really understand. But also, I mean, you know, you say they. What's the point in casting someone famous if you're not going to use their famous voice? I always go back to thinking about robots.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor.
What the hell was that idea? And also, to an extent, Mike Myers is Shrek. But I think Myers probably brought something kind of unique to that. But yeah, it's
He was kind of famous for doing voices, whereas
Ewan
McGregor is, you know, just an actor. Just an actor. Yeah. So, DuckTales, excited still. I like the little what do you call it? Like, not crosshatch, but
half tone.
Yeah, the half tone like treatment of the logo, where it's like it's recalling the old comics, which is very cool as well.
Yeah, and the backgrounds also kind of feel like that. The backgrounds have this great I don't know how to describe it. It's got this it feels like a comic book. It's got like these like heavily inked areas, and I like that they're, you know, trying to honor is it Carl Barks?
I believe so, yeah, because I always want to say Banks, but it's Barks.
Carl Barks's like original comics, even if purists are kind of furious with the redesigns of Huey, Dewey and Louie, and the whole kind of slightly angular approach they've got to the character designs, which I really like, actually. I mean, I'm always of the feeling, you know, if you're doing a remake, what's the point in doing things exactly the same
thing
way
again?
No, it's exciting. Was there's one more trailer that we have to talk about, right? Or two more?
Well, wherever we want to talk about them all, but there is a new trailer for the Mary and the Witch's Flower. From Studio Ponoc and the director of Arrietty and Where Marnie Was There, Hiromasa Yonebayashi, which is the sort of inheritor of the Ghibli style.
Yeah, he was like the heir apparent.
Yeah,
for a while at Ghibli, and he was pretty much, he's a really interesting case, because he was an animator who was kind of born at Ghibli. I think he like applied when he was still in high school.
Wow.
And Miyazaki told him to go back to college or something, or to go and do college, I think. He's been like a pretty strong presence throughout Ghibli's movies, even if you're not aware who he is. His scenes like have a really big stamp. I think one of my favorite scenes he ever did was in Ponyo, when she's just breaking out of the underwater like prison that she's in, and you've got these like giant fish made out of like seawater splashing around everywhere. And there's a bit of that imagery in here, and I think the strange thing that's like tricky to pass about him is that, you know, you see this imagery in the trailer, which is reminiscent of like lots of things in Miyazaki movies, but when you look at it in terms of like, well, professionally, that's been his the soil from which he was grown, essentially.
Yeah.
It's harder to be disappointed or feel like it's an imitation of anything, because it's not an imitation, because he was one of the people who originally drew those images. That's kind of all I really want to say about it, other than the fact that it looks really, really interesting, and I can't wait, and I hope it gets a strong international release, which I'm sure it will.
Well, it's been picked up for the UK already, but we don't know like how wide the release will be and when it will be. It's coming out in Japan July the 8th, so pretty soon, and yeah, it's a beautiful trailer. Check it out. And I also really like the music. It's very so it was like, oh, these, I guess Studio Ponoc are gonna carry the Ghibli flame, and then Miyazaki said, nope, coming back. Stand aside, the master's coming back.
Yeah, yeah.
One more time.
Yeah, he just can't. I mean, I guess, from an outsider's perspective, it seems like he just like can't stand that someone. I think, I seem to recall someone actually saying this. Maybe Suzuki, Miyazaki's producer, saying this, that he literally can't stand the thought that someone else is making a movie. Oh no, I think I heard Suzuki say that of Miyazaki's reaction to the Red Turtle.
Oh.
That he was watching rushes from the Red Turtle, and he said he could see that he was really impressed, but he was also kind of a little bit. Yeah, I guess, yeah, and that kind of makes sense. It's not really actually been announced anywhere or like picked up, but there was a Joe Hisaishi concert in Paris, I think, at the weekend, and during the show, on the screen they projected a memo that Miyazaki had sent Hisaishi, pretty much saying, "Yeah, gonna need you for the next one."
Oh,
so that's kind of a I think it's fair enough to see that as a as a tease, as good as confirmation that he'll be back.
Oh, it's got to be,
because I can't really imagine a Miyazaki film without his music.
No, not at all. Hey, while we're talking about anime, there's going to be some more anime coming to cinemas in the UK, and one of them is the film from the director of Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex and Eden of the East, by the name of Kenji Kamiyama, and that is the film being known as Napping Princess, also known as Ant Seen in the Magic Tablet, I think was the title it screened at under on the New York Children's Film Festival. And this is a film we've talked about a little bit, and the trailer and art are very beautiful, and it's got a kind of bizarre setup with a young girl who falls asleep and has strange dreams, have something to do with mechanical creatures and stuff, and it kind of makes you think a bit of FLCL or Fooly Cooly. This is going to be in cinemas in August, courtesy of Anime Limited. So you might want to watch this space to find out if it's going to be playing anywhere near you. And the other one is a film that kind of surprised us, because we kind of thought it had been and gone. And that is Mamoru Hosoda's The Boy and the Beast, which... Dan, I think you saw, was it not last year, but the year before? Ago.
Yeah, I saw it in, I guess it must have been the same year it came out in Japan, which was, what, 2015? Yeah.
Which is when it screened at London Film Festival, and Studio Canal announced that they were going to release it, and then they didn't, and we were a bit confused. So there was no cinema release at the time, and then it was listed as going to be released on Blu-ray and DVD, like on Amazon and places, and then it just disappeared, and everyone was a bit confused. And then, out of nowhere, we found out that it's going to be having some cinema screenings in the UK on July the 10th in Picture House Cinemas. And it's pretty limited release, but... you know, it's a chance to see it in cinemas if there's one near you, and then hopefully, finally, the home release will follow after that.
Yeah, but I mean, that might well have been a contractual obligation which they have to fulfill. Mm. Yeah, it has to maybe see some kind of cinema release of a certain size before it can. That might be. I mean, it's not, actually, it's very nice to see that it's coming in cinemas, but. Practically, that might be a reason. Maybe, I really don't know, because it is very It seems like a very strange thing to do with a film which is essentially, you know, probably not got much of a. I don't know what the word is. It's an old film by this point, mm-hmm. So drumming up interest in it is going to be really hard because, frankly speaking, if you want to see the movie and it's been unavailable in the UK, then you might well have seen it legally, you know, already.
Well, you might have just imported the DVD or Blu-ray from abroad because it's been released in the yes. US and Australia.
Yes, so... but I'm saying that's technically, very technically speaking, that's legal.
So that's
what I mean by that, and I think it's it's just kind of crazy that, you know, in a sense they've waited this. I know it might not have been a twiddling mm-hmm. the thumb situation, but that they've waited this long to release the film. It's because anime fans are anything if not impatient.
Yeah. I know that the Manga Entertainment released all the previous Hosoda films in the UK, mm-hmm. and I know they were a bit gutted to not have this one. So I think, you know, they were watching what Studio Canal were doing and going, "What are you doing?
Yeah, what
we
are
would
you...
have released this." And you know,
especially when you look at, like, you know, for instance, the two big anime movies which have been in UK cinemas recently, Your Name and A Silent Voice,
yeah,
which had releases which were really close to the Japanese cinema runs, mm-hmm. And therefore kind of quite naturally rolled off the, you know, the international interest in the film, which is what happens in the modern world with, like, the internet, how it functions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone starts talking about these films and they start popping up at festivals, and you know, the momentum is a timely thing in a way. And I honestly thought The Boy and the Beast's, you know, momentum had kind of died. It's kind of because also, like, it's a particularly niche kind of audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, within Studio Canal, which tend to release independent films anyway, you then have this, like, even smaller niche of anime movies, who have a dedicated fan base and probably are very aware that this is a pretty old movie by this point, and it will be a challenge, like, trying to sell it in terms as they have in the trailer, saying it's Mamoru Hosoda's new movie,
which is
technically true.
He hasn't released another one since, so
no, that's technically
that
true.
Accurate.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm quite looking forward to it because I'm gonna get to see it in the cinema again.
And I haven't had a chance to see it. It's not going to be anywhere near me, but I will hope I will be able to get to and watch it on disc shortly after, hopefully. But yeah, it's not like there's even, like, a lot of discussion around Hosoda at the moment, particularly because he's got another film coming out or anything. For, you know, that's not coming out for a year or more. The film that he's working on at the moment. So, you might think, you know, if he was, say this was the new film from Shinkai or something, and, you know, everyone was talking about Your Name, and they've got his last film to release or something, you might release that on the back of it. But this just seems a bit random, and just a bit, maybe that they've run out of Ghibli films.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, also, I'm pretty glad that this hasn't been consigned to a vault, mm-hmm. and they are actually releasing it rather than just sitting on it.
Yeah, well, it seemed a bit weird that they were just going to dump it straight to disc without having released it So I'm glad that they are releasing it.
Yeah.
Also in the anime sphere, but quite a different story, is the fact that it's emerged that there is a live-action TV series being developed based around the classic anime Cowboy Bebop. Yes, which is interesting.
It's really, really weird. It's a really weird idea.
Well, they were talking about a live-action film for ages, and Keanu Reeves was attached for a while, which wasn't like the worst casting, apart from the fact that he's 50.
I mean, he's still pretty. He's a fighting,
he's
a fighting fit guy.
He's sprightly and stuff, but you know, the character isn't supposed to be 50. This is being talked about as a TV series now, and there's not a lot to say about it because it's very early in development.
It's basically just been optioned, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
There's not like any casting or anything, but it's being produced at Tomorrow Studios, who are apparently a collaboration between ITV Studios, who I'm assuming is ITV Studios, the UK company. Who makes stuff like Downton Abbey and stuff like that, and Broadchurch, and a producer called Marty Adelstein. And the script is apparently being written by Chris Yost, who is a veteran of various Marvel projects and other things like that. I think he was a comic writer first, and apparently he co-created X-23. Is that the name of the character? I don't know. The Wolverine, like the mini Wolverine type character who's in Logan.
Okay.
Is that X-23? I don't know either.
We're the wrong people to be
talking about this, obviously. Yeah, and he also, I think he co-wrote on the 4 movies or something like that. And also, Sunrise, the original anime producers, are on board as executive producers. So, and who knows if this is a good idea. But it's, you know, it's been optioned, so there you go.
I don't think it'll ever happen.
No, probably not. But at least it's, you know, something that's more internationally, got more international flavour than some anime that's been optioned. I mean, obviously Ghost in the Shell had a lot of controversy around it for whitewashing and everything, and
So Death Note has similarly had a bit of controversy, which I don't fully understand.
Well, yeah, because there's a difference between what they did with Ghost in the Shell and Death Note. In the Ghost in the Shell, they kept it in the original setting and just put a white person in the lead.
Yeah.
Whereas with Death Note, it is an adaptation, and they've relocated it.
So that's my take on it. That's exactly my take on it as well. I don't quite get the looking at Death Note and saying, well, he's called Yagami, so you can't ever relocate that story to an, I don't think Death Note really has a particularly
Japanese
like flavor that's that is impossible to separate from what it is. I think you could quite easily do an American version with it, set in America, basically. But Cowboy Bebop, I don't know about.
I know what you're saying, because it's set in the future and it's and its protagonists are kind of intentionally a bit what's the word? They're anime characters, right? They're not they're not representing any particular race really, other than oh my goodness, I've forgotten his name. It's been a while since I've seen it. The beefy guy.
Jet Black.
So I don't really, I don't know. It just sounds to me like something that will never happen, because it's, and even if it does happen, it will be either kind of boring, or it will end up doing that thing that Ghost in the Shell did, where it will have this weird kind of slavish, or it will feel this weird kind of slavish duty to mimic the original, rather than have its own sense of creativity. Because Cowboy Bebop, I think, like, really is a really, really interestingly directed series with really arresting visuals, and for me, like, it's almost all about the execution. And whenever remakes of things are announced of movies or cartoon to live action adaptations, I always like query, how do you, are you seeking to mimic something which was just a very, you know, lightning in a bottle situation where the execution of something was good and that was what made it good, rather than, because I don't know if the concept itself is that unique.
No, it's not. It's not the idea of Cowboy Bebop that makes it so good. It is purely the execution and the very, very specific mix of influences and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, can you recreate that? And, you know, and I hear all this and I understand it and I know it's, there is all these reasons for this not to be a good idea, but there's one little thing that means that if this happens, if this one thing happens, I am totally on board. And that is, if we get some more, a new soundtrack album from Yoko Kanno, and I'm on board.
Interesting. Okay.
Just for that, you know, even if the thing's rubbish, if we get a good album out of it, then hey.
Yeah, because again, see that's again the thing of Cowboy Bebop is, like, the music is so particular. So even if you, like, had Yoko Kanno back, it would still end up feeling like a kind of Frankenstein attempt of, like, reanimation, to use a pun, an unintended pun. It sounds okay. We'll cautiously keep an eye on it.
But speaking of things that might possibly be remade, but not necessarily, there is a rumour going around that there is a revival of Animaniacs in the pipeline. This was reported on by IndieWire, who said that it was in very early stages and it hasn't even, like, got a network signed on or anything. But they said that Steven Spielberg's Amblin Entertainment and Warner Brothers were looking at bringing back Animaniacs, which would be interesting. Hasn't been, like, officially announced by Warner Brothers or anything, so take it with a bit of
pinch of salt. I got a feeling, perhaps.
Yeah.
they might see how DuckTales goes first before greenlighting. And then if DuckTales probably goes well or is received well, then they'll decide, because at the end of the day it's a business decision.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to see it in those terms. They'll probably decide whether it's worth them resurrecting their beloved 90s property cartoon. But yeah, I don't know. Not again, like, to sound like a broken record or a downer or anything, it was kind of a thing of its time, and it was about the execution of that show when it happened, and specifically like where it sat actually in history and animation history, I think, which is why it was good or beloved. So yeah, it's kind of a bit of an odd one again for me.
Yeah, but that can also be said of like DuckTales and Danger Mouse, and you know, they found a way of making those different.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. All the best of them. I'm just a grump. I don't know what to say. Well, I'm not a grump. Yeah. It's more like it takes so much effort. And I guess this isn't a animation specific thing, this is just a general thing. It takes so much effort to make something.
Mm-hmm.
That every time I hear about a reboot, it's okay, because look, reboots and remakes have always existed, you know, since the year dot, like, things have been remade and reimagined, and it's fine. But it's just, you know, yeah, everything, it takes so much effort and passion and sweat and blood and tears and all of this energy to make. I just look at like an announcement like that and go, okay, well, is it really worth like trying to, you know, put the electrodes, you know, to that Frankenstein monster's head to desperately reanimate it? Or could you just put your efforts into doing what you did when you came up with that idea, which is what's a new idea we could have? So yeah, I just need to get used to the world we're living in, I guess.
Don't we all? But supposedly, this might be partly down to the fact that in America, at least, it is available on Netflix, and it's been very popular, and you know, with like original audience and also got a new audience. And it's interesting because I remember when, I think around the time when it came out, someone basically wrote an article, basically how it's all aged terribly and you can't make any of these jokes anymore, and it's all so so bad now. So who knows.
Yeah, that's actually also another reservation I have is they won't be able to get away with as much.
They'll just get away with different things, maybe.
I think that's right. I think if it went on something like Netflix, then you wouldn't have the restrictions that brought, you know, the S&P restrictions that broadcast cartoons face, maybe. I don't know.
Well, that might be the most likely scenario, because Netflix can like look at their statistics, you know. No one knows the ins and outs of Netflix's strange algorithms and everything, but they know supposedly what people have been watching, so they can say, this is worth us throwing money at. And also, it being Netflix, don't be surprised if they just go, hey, Animaniacs, it's on tomorrow, out tomorrow. You know, not quite. They don't announce things like far in advance. They put a trailer out and go, this is on like in a month's time, and you've never heard of it before. I mean, sometimes you hear about things in advance, but, you know, like, did anyone know what Stranger Things was before that dropped, pretty much? And that Castlevania thing that they released recently, and it's out in July.
yeah.
So, who knows, maybe we won't hear anything about this for ages. And noticeably, like the original voice actors, like Rob Paulsen and everything, they haven't said anything about it. So,
right,
and they would have to be involved, surely, or people would be really pissed off. But again, you know, perhaps they know, and they're just perhaps they're under contract, and they might just announce, you know, sometime soon that it's going to be on Netflix tomorrow. Who knows? Well, we shall just have to watch this space, and in the meantime, maybe just watch some old Animaniacs, which I haven't seen in ages, and I would like to go back and watch it. It was something I did love from my childhood. I think I was possibly more into Tiny Toons, but I wasn't an Animaniacs fan as well.
I think Animaniacs wasn't on as much, so it was probably harder to find.
Mm-hmm. But I sort of remember it being in pretty much the same slot, maybe, just...
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, one more story we wanted to mention, that is related to something we sometimes talk about here on the podcast, which is virtual reality, and one of our favourite animation studios and one of our favourite films, because Cartoon Saloon have announced that they have crafted a Song of the Sea virtual reality experience that will be released for free via the Oculus platform, at least. But I don't know if it will be released on other platforms as well, and I've got to say I don't know, you know, all that much about VR, but I've watched the video of this and it looks very pretty, and it looks like you can basically be in the film, which is something that's exciting. Dan, what do you think about this?
Yeah, it's exciting. I just want to try a VR something, anything, yeah, soon.
Anything.
I was at a show in the week, and there was an opportunity to use it, and I had to go immediately, before my time came, and then nice. Yeah. So I'm just sort of like, I don't even really believe VR exists. I'll be skeptical about it until I actually play with it. But yeah, I mean, the trailer looks great. It looks like a really cool thing to try out. I just want to try it out.
Cool. We will stick the video link to the video in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself, and then maybe one day you'll be able to check out the experience itself for yourself. Oh, and there is a film project that we heard of a little while ago that is being developed at Fox Animation, and it is based on a children's book called The Care and Feeding of a Pet Black Hole. And this is by somebody, an author called Michelle Cuevas, I think is how you...
Cuevas.
I'm sorry if I'm butchering the name, but she is an author who also wrote a book called Confessions of an Imaginary Friend that was also optioned by Fox. And this is apparently about this book, which is being released this September, so it's not even out yet. It features an 11-year-old girl who goes to NASA, and basically she gets followed home by a black hole, and the black hole becomes her pet, and it begins to eat everything it touches. The synopsis says, including the ugly sweaters her aunt has made for her, the smelly class hamster she's taken care of, and most important, all the reminders of her dead father that are just too painful to have around. So Sounds like it's got a bit
of dark quickly.
Yeah, it's got a bit of an emotional element. Yeah.
I kind of want the trailer to be that.
To be that much happy like story.
Punch. Yeah. Okay, that sounds interesting. The amateur astronomy fan in me is kind of confused face about how there's a black hole on Earth and it's not destroyed the entirety of the solar system, but is kind of I think like a ghost kind of thing.
Well, I think if you find that impossible to accept, you're going to have a hard time with this, because
I think
you have to just accept that early on. And
I can already like feel like Neil deGrasse Tyson probably like preemptive tweets like backed up ready in his drafts for when it's released.
It's like no.
Yeah, that sounds like a cool idea, though. I like that. I like the. Do you know what? This is kind of a strange thing as well to say as like a science fan, but I kind of like that it's making science feel like really magical.
Yeah,
like that could easily not be a black hole. It could also just as much easily be a mythical creature or something like a Pete's Dragon kind of story, but I like that it's a black hole. That's really cute. And it's being produced by Matt Reeves, is it?
Yes.
Who I like. I like his point of view on things. I'm really liking his new Planet of the Apes movies.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's going to direct The Batman.
Oh, the one with Affleck?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was he was like rumoured for ages to be in talks, and then he said, nope, not going to do it. And then they said, oh, yeah, he is going to do it. It was one of those cases where they offered him a truckload of money, and he went, all right, whatever. Because Ben Affleck isn't directing it anymore. I don't know if you knew that.
I did hear something about that. That's really interesting.
He's starring in it, but not directing it. Which is going to be pretty weird when you're a director and you were going to direct it, but you've still got to turn up. And you'd be like, yeah, that's not how I would have done it. Going to be really, you know, back.
I'm imagining maybe that's how David Lynch felt about the episodes of Twin Peaks he was in, that he was not directing, but he appears as a character and he has to, yeah, just deal with it, I guess.
I didn't even know he was in it.
I have never watched it. He plays like an FBI agent. But yeah, what's interesting is again. Just going back to Matt Reeves, the fact that a traditionally not animation guy is involved in producing a film that's animated.
Yeah, but the Planet of the Apes movies are very heavily
70% animated. They are, but I still think that the like particularly like the pre-production of a animated movie is another world. I mean, you know, story is story and that doesn't change, and you know, having a point of view about like editing or the types of shots that you want is one thing, but it's still just interesting because what was the last thing that Fox Animation did? I can't even remember.
Well, the thing is that you only think of like the Blue Sky stuff, which isn't actually they're separate.
Yeah, I'm thinking of like Ice Age, Horton, Peanuts. They did Peanuts, right?
Well, that was Blue Sky.
Oh, okay.
This is what's... Because this isn't Blue Sky, this is Fox Animation. Or it would say Blue Sky, I think. So...
Yes, that's true.
I'm not even sure what the last thing they did as Fox Animation... I know they used to do things back in the day, like...
When the Digimon movie. I think it's also actually quite confusing because do they not have a in the US some sort of like distribution deal with Paramount or DreamWorks or something? So
yeah, they do DreamWorks, I think now. Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to be a can of worms trying to figure out where.
Wait, no, maybe they don't anymore because Universal bought DreamWorks. So
I can't keep up.
Yeah, it's confusing. I just edit this bit out. It's fine.
Fascinating talk. Yeah, I just googled Fox Animation movies, and the first hit is Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Mm. But which, again, it's not.
Oh, it was. Which was actually 20th Century Fox was actually involved and distributed it. Okay, that's even more confusing. Okay.
But I think they must have like a CG animation department that.
Yes.
Maybe hasn't released anything yet. Possibly.
They have a. Do they have one out later in the year called Ferdinand?
That is Blue Sky.
Oh, I give up.
To be honest, I thought perhaps that was like when I watched the trailer for that, I could have mistaken it for being like from the makers of something like the Nut Job or was the Norm of the North or something like that. It doesn't look, which is disappointing seeing as Peanuts movie was so great.
Yeah, it is. I think so there was an article that came out, I think, not to give them too much publicity, Cartoon Brew, or it might have been a Variety article, and Cartoon Brew kind of piggybacked on it, about how the Captain Underpants movie.
Mm-hmm.
Was outsourced, and therefore they managed to like really keep down the production costs on it. So I don't know. Maybe there will be a little bit of a rivalry and friendly competition between those big animation studios to try and create. At least production in the actual animation production terms, like cheaper movies. So maybe that might be why you feel that way. I don't know.
Well, the thing that amazed me when I read that article was the fact that the Boss Baby cost $120 million or something. I was like, really? Not that I've seen it, but from what I saw, like, I thought that was one of the lower budget ones. I knew that they were trying to make cheaper movies,
right?
And I thought from what I'd seen the Boss Baby looked like that, but to be fair, I have heard people say about there being some really impressive animation sequences in it.
I've heard that too. I think it's really, really hard to look at an animated film and talk about it in terms of budget, because it's not a straight from live action where it's like, well, you know, you've got a whole city that blows up and lots of explosions and, you know, lots of big big crowd scenes and, you know, like a CG character. I think it's a bit trickier to like look at a movie and see where the money has gone, because I mean, particularly if you've got like a typical American big studio animated movie, a lot of the costs are going to be sunk into your voice actors. Because that's going to, what, you know, is usually going to sell the movie, or do a big job of selling the movie.
Or at least that's what they think.
yeah, that's what they bank on. But yeah, it's probably quite tricky to, I think at least, to look at an animated movie and go, all right, is there, did that really, why did that cost that much? And actually, I think in the article that I'm talking about, there was a quote from Katzenberg, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and it was like, you know, oh, okay, we don't have dragons or the sea in this film, so it's going to be cheaper. I think that was quite a crass simplification of that. Anyway, I think I somehow managed to completely derail that train we were on, whatever it was.
Yeah. We were talking about the pet black hole thing. But what, just one other thing about the Captain Underpants. One thing that made me slightly more intrigued to see it was when I found out that apparently Weird Al wrote a song for the themes, for the opening titles or something.
The opening titles of what? Sorry.
Captain Underpants.
Oh, cool.
So that's one thing to recommend it. There you go.
Well, that was great. Yeah.
Actually, it's had some pretty solid reviews, but.
Yeah. There's a friend of mine, like, won't shut up about it. he really rates it, and he the art book looks gorgeous, and I'm probably, unfortunately, gonna have to just catch up with it on DVD or Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me as well. I think that will about round us up for news. So before we call it a day, we're going to pay our usual visit to the water cooler, where we talk about things that we've been watching, sometimes things that we've been playing, sometimes things that we've been reading, etc., but mainly things we've been watching. And this past week I was finally able to watch The Red Turtle, the Michael Dudok DeWitt Studio Ghibli Wild Bunch co-production, as it came out in the UK a couple of weeks ago, and this week it came to the cinema near me, so I was able to go and watch it.
Oh, great. So you saw it in the cinema, in the big screen.
Yes.
Sweet.
I was very pleased about that. And I would, like I said earlier, we're not going to give away any spoilers or go into too much details, but I would definitely say, if you get the chance to see it on the big screen, definitely do. I think it's definitely worth watching on the biggest screen you can find, if you can, because it is a very beautiful movie. I would say it's very unlike anything Studio Ghibli have done, because it's, you know, Studio Ghibli co-production, and I've heard people say, oh yeah, it's pure Ghibli magic or whatever in the reviews.
No.
But you go, it's very different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very good, but it's also very different. So I would say, in some ways, it, you know, gave me similar emotions that I might feel to when I watch a Studio Ghibli film. But I would say it's very much its own thing, and feels very European, I would say. The animation is beautiful. The music is beautiful. The story is something quite unexpected, but it's not really about the story either. It's more like about the experience and how it makes you feel. It sort of grabs you by the throat early on, like just throws you in with the because it's about the guy who gets stranded on a deserted island, or desert island, not desert because it's not hot. can you still call it a desert island just because it's got nobody on it? I don't know.
I think if you say it's a desert island, people understand that you basically mean, you know, you're cut off from society, and Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fine. So yeah,
because one of the things is it's not like tropical lush paradise. It's pretty grey, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's not a lush paradise, but also, not to give too much away, the film isn't concerned with doing the Tom Hanks Castaway thing of like, you know, oh, how does he survive? How does he find water? How does he make shoes? Or just something like that. You know, it's this word is like always thrown around like so loosely. I think it's kind of okay to call it a bit of a philosophical sort of story.
I believe in the interview on animationforadults.com, Michael DeWitt would agree with you there. So yes, I think it is fair to say.
Cool. I'm glad I'm being fair.
Yeah.
To exactly what he said. Yeah. It's probably much more likely that I'm subconsciously just leaking that from having read the interview. I've not seen the movie. I was invited to go and watch it with a group of friends actually recently, but I kind of turned down the opportunity because I feel like I was a little bit, and I'm also one of these awful people in cinemas who kind of demands absolute silence for any kind of film, and
yeah,
I kind of couldn't handle the thought of risking, you know, people talking through the film or anything like that, because it is really like something to get lost in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when I think about it, I mean, I saw it now, like back in October, but when I think about the film, the thing that really actually stands out in my mind the most is the amazing rhythm that he manages to create just with movement and sound and like simple film editing. For a large stretch of the film, there isn't actually music.
Mm-hmm.
But it's carried with just the rhythms of how the editing plays out and how different sounds create rhythm, and the animation moves in a certain rhythmic fashion. I'd be curious to watch it again and see if that's the thing that sticks out again, or whether something else pops out at me.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be interested to rewatch it. See how I react differently on a rewatch, but from the first time round, it's a beautiful film. I recommend it, and I recommend watching it on a big screen if you can. Interesting time, I think, for animation, independent animation in the UK, because that is in cinemas, as is My Life as a Courgette.
That was brilliant. It's really exciting, yeah.
And they've both been, you know, absolutely, the critical community have been really praising them in the UK, which is great to hear.
Yeah, and also, you know, UK talent was, well, you know, involved. I think Michael DeWitt makes his home in London.
Yeah.
So there's some relation there to that, and then also My Life as a Courgette had a few British animators on it as well, so you're still supporting British animation by watching those, I think.
Awesome.
It's fair to say. Yeah
I think a lot, like some of the early production, I think for The Red Turtle was done in London, I think.
Yeah.
There was an article like how this Ghibli movie started in a shed in London or something.
Yeah, I'm okay, it's very good that it's a Ghibli co-production. That's very exciting and everything. I think it needs to be understood a little bit, and we'll probably get into it when we do a full episode on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just in what way they're involved in it, and it being more of a consulting role rather than production. It was produced in France. Mm-hmm. Really, it was, I mean, by which I mean it was animated in France, and Yeah, I think that's important to recognise. It didn't just pop up out of the ground over at Ghibli.
Mm-hmm. I think it should. It's interesting that the Totoro logo at the beginning is on a red background. You see,
it's an eerie feeling, isn't it?
This is a different Ghibli movie to what you've ever seen before. It's what it's saying to you, and I think you should be prepared for that. And
despite the fact that the Totoro logo is at the start and it says Studio Ghibli, I don't really consider a Ghibli film.
Fair enough, but I think a lot of the promotion and stuff is geared around that, and
that's good. Yeah,
I think, you know, some people might be disappointed because it's very different and it's not what they're expecting. I know someone wrote into the Wishtainment podcast on the BBC.
Basically, oh god, I took my son who loves Totoro, and we were really.
Actually, there was people saying that they took their kids, and that was really that was positive. It was actually like a woman on her own was complaining about it, saying like calling it a travesty, and and saying how after the what brilliant representation of female characters there were in Ghibli movies, and how this was terrible for that, which. Not we won't go into, but it's kind of.
I would love to ask those people who go, oh, this isn't the Ghibli I know. Like, have you ever seen any Takahata films? Because they're quite different.
And also, yeah, when they were saying about a certain thing happening, and they were shocked by it. And it's like, again, I don't know what Ghibli films you've actually seen, because you probably have not seen most of them, or you wouldn't. There is much worse that happens in that.
We're being very cryptic, but we'll save that for another time.
We're dancing around things so as not to give anything away. One other thing that I did watch this week was an anime movie, definitely this time. It was actually a movie in the Naruto franchise. But it is, I think it's the most recent one that's come out so far, and that was called, confusingly, Boruto Naruto the Movie, but because they have to put Naruto the Movie in the title, but it could just be called Boruto the Movie, because it's very confusing the way this franchise ended up, because the manga ended and then the anime kept going, but then movies came out that were after the end of the manga, and then the TV series ended. And this is one of those movies that came out set after the end of the manga, and is about the son of Naruto, yes, who is called Boruto, which is never gonna not sound kind of daft.
Yeah, it sounds like someone like trying to call Naruto a name and desperately reaching for Boruto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, is it any good?
Yes. I really enjoyed it. It was just like really entertaining in the way, cuz it obviously it features the next generation of characters as part of it, but I really like the way they've sort of aged up the original characters. I think they just feel like naturally like the grown up versions of the characters, and I think the designs are really good, because we've talked about it before, but basically these Shonen Jump movies have been getting better, because they've actually, rather than just like knocking them out every year and just making them filler, they've been like getting the original creators involved, and they've been taking longer about it, and strangely enough the movies have got better as well.
Kishimoto, the creator of Naruto, did the screenplay for this one as well, right?
Yep, and he did designs for it, and yeah, it's kind of, in a way it's kind of like a throwback to like early Naruto, because it's got the kids like trying to pass the chunin exams and stuff. So for like an hour, it just feels like, oh, you're kind of like going back to the original series.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is fun, exactly. And then sort of they bring in a bit of a, you know, a slightly more serious plot, but even then it's still quite, it feels a bit more throwaway or whatever, rather than, oh, it's the ninja world's in peril again type plot. And basically it's got these like moments towards the climax that sort of, if you've got any sort of attachment to the characters, it's got some real sort of punch the air sort of moments where you go, yeah. And like the characters, like the younger version of the characters, there's a bit of a sort of Muppet Babies feel to them, but
well, I'm sure there is, but I mean, at least it seems like it's probably going to be natural, because
exactly,
Naruto was one of those generational
insult.
I know what you mean. But Naruto was always like a generational saga,
mm-hmm.
Sort of story anyway, and like you always had you know, characters like oh my goodness, what was he called? Rock Lee and his was it his dad or his?
I can't even remember if they're related. So it's just God, is he? He's called
his
Guy.
Protege.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, Rock and Guy, and you know, there was always kind of like a little bit of a mini me thing going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, then there's, you know, they've all the characters from the original have sort of paired off and had offspring, so you get characters that are crossed between this character and that character and things like that. And
fun.
Yeah, just, you know, if you've got any attachment to the series, it's enjoyable and really fun, and just as a like a fun 90-minute movie with some fun ninja action and some great characters and some pretty nice looking animation. It's not it's not like the like Ghibli
or anything. Is it Studio Pierro who do it, the ones who do the series?
I know that they've done like a series of Boruto now, and I remember like people were saying like the early episodes, the animation of that was really high quality as well. But this movie, I would say, if you like Naruto and you're up to date with everything else, then check it out. It's a good time. And I haven't really got much else to say apart from it's fun and I enjoyed it and
awesome.
And yeah, and I think that's about it, because I don't think I watched anything else that I need, that I can talk about particularly animation wise. I talked about it on the show last week. I did I watched BFG the other week.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Chris, I am a bad person and I haven't listened to last week's show.
No, I don't.
Can you fill me in and what you thought of it very briefly?
I enjoyed it. I was kind of blown away by some of the like character animation and stuff.
Amazing, amazing. Yes, I really loved that film.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I thought it was just like, I really liked how it didn't try and make it feel up the scale of anything too much. It was just mm-hmm. like a very faithful adaptation of the story, and the finale, you know, for instance, was appropriately scaled. It didn't you know, become about the jeopardy of London, like, you know, mm-hmm. falling or anything like that. It was just a very good kids movie,
and Mark Rylance was amazing.
Oh yeah. The film broke my heart. It was really good. Classic Spielberg, really. as far as I was concerned. Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I did wanted to mention that because I know you talked about it when you saw it, and then I caught up with it, and I talked about it on the show last time, but you weren't here, so there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, I unfortunately don't have anything too much to contribute to to the water cooler, really. I mean, the weird thing is because I've been like, I'm a storyboarder at the moment, and I am, whenever I'm watching films, I, depending on how good they are, I slip into like studying the shots and as they progress and everything. And I have actually been watching a lot of animation lately. I've been watching like a bunch of old SpongeBobs and lots of the cartoon shows from the 90s, Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls, Johnny Bravo, and lots and lots of things, Gravity Falls, just like studying storyboarding and animation. So I've been like, hour for hour, I've probably watched like 3 hours of cartoons this week, but not really with anything other than the intention of like pausing it every minute or so to make a note or to study. So yeah, that's why I'm so empty-handed at the water cooler this week.
That's all right. I think we've discussed a nice load of topics today.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's been a good one.
Yeah. If you want to catch up with everything we do, you can follow us. You can keep up with all the posts on animationforadults.com. You can follow us on Twitter at AFA Blog. You can find us on Facebook, on Tumblr, on Pinterest, on Instagram and YouTube. And if you would like to help us make more awesome content for you in future, you could become a backer on Patreon and get some awesome content in return from just $1 a month. And you could, or if you prefer, you can make a one-off donation by buying us a virtual coffee. And you can find me at Mr. Crystal on Twitter and Facebook. And where can we find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Hamu.
Awesome. And we will be back very soon with another episode of the AFA podcast. So keep an eye out for that. Okay, good night, everybody.
Goodbye.